Brutus 1, October 18th, 1787. We have felt the feebleness of the ties by which these United States are held together and the want of sufficient energy in our present confederation to manage, in some instances, our general concerns. Various expedients have been proposed to remedy these evils, but none have succeeded. At length, a convention of the states has been assembled. They have formed a constitution which will now, probably, be submitted to the people to ratify or reject, who are the fountain of all power, to whom alone it of right belongs to make or unmake constitutions or forms of government at their pleasure. The most important question that was ever proposed to your decision, or to the decision of any people under heaven, is before you, and you are to decide upon it by men of your own election, chosen specially for this purpose. If the Constitution, offered to your acceptance, be a wise one, calculated to preserve the invaluable blessings of liberty, to secure the inestimable rights of mankind, and promote human happiness, then, if you accept it, you will lay a lasting foundation of happiness for millions yet unborn. Generations to come will rise up and call you blessed. You may rejoice in the prospects of this vast, extended continent becoming filled with freemen, who will assert the dignity of human nature. You may solace yourselves with the idea that society, in this favored land, will fast advance to the highest point of perfection. The human mind will expand in knowledge and virtue, and the golden age be, in some measure, realized. But if, on the other hand, this form of government contains principles that will lead to the subversion of liberty, if it tends to establish a despotism, or, what is worse, a tyrannic aristocracy, then, if you adopt it, this only remaining asylum for liberty will be shut up, and posterity will execrate your memory. With these few introductory remarks, I shall proceed to a consideration of this Constitution. The first question that presents itself on the subject is whether a confederated government be the best for the United States or not. Or in other words, whether the 13 United States should be reduced to one great republic, governed by one legislature and under the direction of one executive and judicial, or whether they should continue 13 confederated republics under the direction and control of a supreme federal head for certain defined national purposes only. This inquiry is important because, although the government reported by the convention does not go to a perfect and entire consolidation, yet it approaches so near to it that it must, if executed, certainly and infallibly terminate in it. This government is to possess absolute and uncontrollable power, legislative, executive, and judicial, with respect to every object to which it extends. For by the last clause of Section 8, Article 1, it is declared, quote, that the Congress shall have power to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers, and all other powers vested by this Constitution in the government of the United States, or in any department or office thereof. Unquote. And by the sixth article, it is declared, quote, that this Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and the treaties made, or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, anything in the Constitution or law of any state to the contrary notwithstanding. Unquote. It appears from these articles that there is no need of any intervention of the state governments between the Congress and the people to execute any one power vested in the general government, and that the Constitution and laws of every state are nullified and declared void so far as they are or shall be inconsistent with this Constitution or the laws made in pursuance of it or with treaties made under the authority of the United States. The government, then, so far as it extends, is a complete one and not a confederation. It is as much one complete government as that of New York or Massachusetts has as absolute and perfect powers to make and execute all laws, to appoint officers, institute courts, declare offenses, and annex penalties with respect to every object to which it extends as any other in the world. So far, therefore, as its powers reach, all ideas of confederation are given up and lost. It has authority to make laws which will affect the lives, the liberty, and property of every man in the United States. Nor can the Constitution or laws of any state in any way prevent or impede the full and complete execution of every power given. The legislative power is competent to lay taxes, duties, imposts, and excises. There is no limitation to this power, unless it be said that the clause which directs the use to which those taxes and duties shall be applied may be said to be a limitation. But this is no restriction of the power at all, for by this clause they are to be applied to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. But the legislature have authority to contract debts at their discretion. They are the sole judges of what is necessary to provide for the common defense. And they only are to determine what is for the general welfare. This power, therefore, is neither more nor less than a power to lay and collect taxes, imposts, and excises at their pleasure. In the business, therefore, of laying and collecting taxes, the idea of confederation is totally lost, and that of one entire republic is embraced. It is proper here to remark that the authority to lay and collect taxes is the most important of any power that can be granted. It connects with it almost all other powers, or at least will, in process of time, draw all other after it. It is the great mean of protection, security, and defense in a good government, and the great engine of oppression and tyranny in a bad one. The judicial power of the United States is to be vested in a Supreme Court, and in such inferior courts as Congress may, from time to time, ordain and establish. The powers of these courts are very extensive. Their jurisdiction comprehends all civil cases, except such as arise between citizens of the same state, and it extends to all cases in law and equity arising under the Constitution. One inferior court must be established, I presume, in each state at least, with the necessary executive officers appendant thereto. It is easy to see that in the common course of things, these courts will eclipse the dignity and take away from the respectability of the state courts. These courts will be, in themselves, totally independent of the states, deriving their authority from the United States and receiving from them fixed salaries. And in the course of human events, it is to be expected that they will swallow up all the powers of the courts in the respective states. How far the clause in the 8th section of the first article may operate to do away all idea of confederated states and to effect an entire consolidation of the whole into one general government, it is impossible to say. The powers given by this article are very general and comprehensive, and it may receive a construction to justify the passing almost any law. A power to make all laws, which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution all powers vested by the Constitution in the government of the United States, or any department or officer thereof, is a power very comprehensive and definite, and may, for aught I know, be exercised in such a manner as entirely to abolish the state legislatures. The legislature of the United States are vested with the great and uncontrollable powers of laying and collecting taxes, duties, imposts, and excises, of regulating trade, raising and supporting armies, organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia, instituting courts, and other general powers, and are by this clause invested with the power of making all laws proper and necessary for carrying all these into execution. And they may so exercise this power as entirely to annihilate all the state governments and reduce this country to one single government. And if they may do it, it is pretty certain they will, for it will be found that the power retained by individual states, small as it is, will be a clog upon the wheels of the government of the United States. The latter, therefore, will be naturally inclined to remove it out of the way. Besides, it is a truth confirmed by the unerring experience of ages that every man and every body of men invested with power are ever disposed to increase it and to acquire a superiority over everything that stands in their way. Let us now proceed to inquire whether it be best the 13 United States should be reduced to one great republic or not. It is here taken for granted that all agree in this, that whatever government we adopt, it ought to be a free one. that it should be so framed as to secure the liberty of the citizens of America, and such a one as to admit a full, fair, and equal representation of the people. The question then will be whether a government thus constituted and founded on such principles is practicable and can be exercised over the whole United States, reduced into one state? In every government, the will of the sovereign is the law. In despotic governments, the supreme authority being lodged in one, his will is law, and can be as easily expressed to a large, extensive territory as to a small one. In a pure democracy, the people are the sovereign, and their will is declared by themselves for this purpose. They must all come together to deliberate and decide. This kind of government cannot be exercised, therefore, over a country of any considerable extent. It must be confined to a single city, or at least limited to such bounds as that the people can conveniently assemble, be able to debate, understand the subject submitted to them, and declare their opinion concerning it. In a free republic, although all laws are derived from the consent of the people, yet the people do not declare their consent by themselves in person, but by representatives, chosen by them, who are supposed to know the minds of their constituents, and to be possessed of integrity to declare this mind. If the people are to give their assent to the laws by persons chosen and appointed by them, the manner of the choice and the number chosen must be such as to possess, be disposed, and consequently qualified to declare the sentiments of the people. For if they do not know, or are not disposed to speak the sentiments of the people do not govern, but the sovereignty is in a few. Now, in a large extended country, it is impossible to have a representation possessing the sentiments and of integrity to declare the minds of the people without having it so numerous and unwieldy as to be the subject in great measure to the inconveniency of a democratic government. The territory of the United States is of vast extent. It now contains near 3 millions of souls and is capable of containing much more than 10 times that number. Is it practicable for a country so large and so numerous as they will soon become to elect a representation that will speak their sentiments without their becoming so numerous as to be incapable of transacting public business? It certainly is not. In a republic, the manners, sentiments, and interests of the people should be similar. If this be not the case, there will be a constant clashing of opinions, and the representatives of one part will be continually striving against those of the other. This will retard the operations of government and prevent such conclusions as will promote the public good. If we apply this remark to the condition of the United States, we shall be convinced that it forbids that we should be one government. The United States includes a variety of climates. The productions of the different parts of the Union are very variant, and their interests of consequence diverse. Their manners and habits differ as much as their climates and productions, and their sentiments are by no means coincident. The laws and customs of the several states are, in many respects, very diverse, and in some opposite. Each would be in favor of its own interests and customs, and, of consequence, a legislature, formed of representatives from the respective parts, would not only be too numerous to act with any care or decision, but would be composed of such heterogeneous and discordant principles as would constantly be contending with each other. The confidence which the people have in their rulers in a free republic arises from their knowing them, from their being responsible to them for their conduct, and from the power they have of displacing them when they misbehave. But in a republic of the extent of this continent, the people in general would be acquainted with very few of their rulers. The people at large would know little of their proceedings, and it would be extremely difficult to change them. The different parts of so extensive a country could not possibly be made acquainted with the conduct of their representatives, nor be informed of the reasons upon which measures were founded. The consequence will be they will have no confidence in their legislature, suspect them of ambitious views, be jealous of every measure they adopt, and will not support the laws they pass. Hence, the government will be nerveless and inefficient, and no way will be left to render it otherwise, but by establishing an armed force to execute the laws at the point of the bayonet, a government of all others the most to be dreaded. In a republic of such vast extent as the United States, The legislature cannot attend to the various concerns and wants of its different parts. It cannot be sufficiently numerous to be acquainted with the local condition and wants of the different districts, and if it could, it is impossible it should have sufficient time to attend to and provide for all the variety of cases of this nature that would be continually arising. These are some of the reasons by which it appears that a free republic cannot long subsist over a country of the great extent of these states. If then this new constitution is calculated to consolidate the 13 states into one, as it evidently is, it ought not be adopted.